I wipe the mist off the shower glass again. She curls a brunette strand.
Yeah?
I'm seeing someone, I say, flat out. Jane startles, the iron slipping out of her grasp, burning her wrist before thudding to the tiled floor.
Merde.
I instantly crack open the shower door, ready to help, but she raises a hand like, wait. Jane picks up the iron, sets it aside on the sink, and then runs her reddened wrist beneath the faucet. I wait a couple seconds, half hidden behind the door. I don't retreat or shut it. When she rotates fully, Jane steeples her fingers to her pink lips. Blue eyes widen like saucers on me. She's in shock. It's crazy, I agree.
It's Pharaoh?
She guesses accurately. Maybe because of the massage that one time. Obviously, she's sensed something between me and Pharaoh then. But it reminds me that I need to be more careful with Pharaoh. No one can find out. Not unless we purposefully tell them. Yeah, I say. It's Pharaoh.
What changed? She asks. Wait, no. How long has this been going on? When did it start?
She begins to smile. She's smiling? My eyes start burning, overwhelmed for a hot second. Why are you smiling?
You're risking so much by being with a bodyguard, and for you to do that, you have to like him, truly. I just want you to be happy, Mafi. Isn't that all we've ever wanted for each other?
I nod a couple times. She's happy for me, despite the consequences and the colossal secret that she'll have to keep. She's happy for me. While she cools her wrist beneath the faucet again, I tell her, it hasn't been long. We just officially fucked last night. Her smile dimples her cheeks.
Remember when we were 16, and you said that if you ever got head from Pharaoh Redford Keene, you'd self-combust and need CPR and an ambulance?
Was that me? I joke.
Most surely.
My lips hike up a fraction. My 16-year-old virginal self would have needed a stretcher if Pharaoh gave me head back then. A light knock wraps the doorframe. Yeah, the door is wide, wide open. And Pharaoh stands there. Gun holstered, earpiece in, radio hooked to his black belt, V-neck tucked. He's ready for today, and I'm naked in a shower with my cousin doing her hair 3 feet away. Plus, I just admitted aloud that I thought about him sexually at 16. Great. I add to the bathroom. Hypothetically. Pharaoh leans a shoulder on the doorframe. You were hypothetically a virgin at 16? Jane snaps her curling iron at Pharaoh.
No virgin shaming.
Pharaoh seems to just now fully register Jane's presence. He looks between us, and his gaze trails down my partially concealed, naked build. His eyes ping back to Jane and me. Is this a usual thing here? He asks us. I'm glad he drops my hypothetical story and fixates on my relationship with Jane. She returns the curling iron to the cupboard.
There's only one bathroom, and it should be more peculiar for Mafi's bodyguard to see him half-naked than for me to.
Pharaoh tilts his head from side to side, considering the statement. I don't think so. See, you're related.
Exactly.
Jane is in defense mode, ready to debate her side like she's prepared with note cards, PowerPoint slides, and 4,000-word essays.
It means nothing to see each other naked because we're cousins, and really, if we dig deep, nudity is a social construct.
Okay, Cobalt, Pharaoh interjects. I'll take a pass on the sociology lecture. I hang on to the top of the shower door. I need them to get along. How about we destroy the argument over which one of you is weirder for seeing me half naked? I can think of a million other topics to debate, like, I toss up my hand and say the first fucking thing I can think of. Why bananas are curved? Jane answers.
Bananas grow towards the sun, Mafi, so as they develop against gravity, they become curved in shape.
Cobalts consume trivia like water. Necessary to everyday life? Pharaoh laughs. I take it back. Your relationship is cute. Jane eyes him curiously.
You know, I can't tell if that's sarcasm.
It's genuine, he assures. Before I broke the whole bodyguard-client boundary, I'd call their relationship cordial, but to both be in my life now, they may have to form something closer to a friendship. And if they can't, I don't know what happens. An apocalypse? Jane glances at Pharaoh and then pulls out acne-medicated face wash.
Just so you realize, Moffy has told me about you two.
I sensed that. He watches Jane. Are you okay with keeping this secret? She nods.
You don't have to worry. I'd never tell anyone.
Scrubbing her face, she creates suds.
If you break his heart, then you'll have to worry about me.
I smile at how blasé she says that. Pharaoh tells her. Threat noted. She rinses her face and pats her cheeks dry with a towel.
Which one of you made the first move, anyway?
Me, Pharaoh and I say in unison. He laughs. I scowl. I'm 100% positive I kissed you first. Pharaoh leans even more casually, his relaxed posture so damn sexy. I'm also 100% positive I was the one who told you how I felt first.
Move is an action.
I took the first action, I rebut. If that's what you want to believe, I'm not going to stop you. His brown eyes sweep me from head to toe, and the steam in my shower feels hotter all of a sudden. I had sex with a childhood crush, 5 years older than me. My bodyguard. Blood pools south, and my cock almost rouses, aching to be gripped, which just means I've mentally sidelined the repercussions and accepted the full-blown attraction. Do I crave a repeat of last night? So damn much. I stare off in a split moment, picturing last night, his tattooed hand sliding up my chest, holding my jaw, his other hand squeezing my... I blink and blink rapidly, catching myself in a trance. Pharaoh stares at me with a knowing look.
I can leave if you need me to,
Jane says. My head whips to her.
No, this is your house. Nothing's changed for you and me.
I can't kick Janie out of the fucking bathroom. It's her bathroom, too. Jane contemplates this for a short second. Then her blue eyes land on my bodyguard.
Do you care if I'm here?
No, Pharaoh says quickly. The only correct answer in my mind. Do you care if I'm here?
No,
she says just as fast. Okay, Pharaoh nods. Then we're cool. She nods firmer. I'm highly aware that they feel pressure to get along, and that pressure is coming from me. But for this to work, all three of us have to coexist.
20. Pharaoh Keen. Work with me here, Pharaoh, Akara says over my phone that I placed in the cup holder of the Audi. Set to speaker while Maximov speeds about 25 over to a gentleman and ladies charity golf tournament. All of your daily logs are empty after 7 p.m. Maximov shoots me a narrowed look. I mouth, it's okay. I'd touch him, his hand or his shoulder, but I keep a close eye on two silver SUVs that ride our bumper. I'm not sure if they have far-range camera lenses, but if one even briefly catches us in a slight embrace, we're done. I like him too much to risk everything now just to hold hands, especially when I can grip his cock later tonight. I just don't see the issue, I tell Akara. When I was on Lily's security detail, I always left gaps in the daily logs. If Alpha's not used to that by now, then that's their fucking problem, not yours. My maverick tendencies make sneaking around with Maximov easier. Where did your client go from 7 p.m. to midnight? Blank. No one's business but ours. Forget Alpha, Akara growls, switching between boss and friend too well. This is me talking to you right now. And I'm telling you that I have two bodyguards on my force not filling out their logs. Did I not specifically remind you that Quinn would pick up your habits? An annoyed noise sticks to my throat. I didn't notice he was copying me. I don't actively check everyone else's logs. It's a waste of time. Man, it could be a good thing, I say, fixing my earpiece as muffled sound filters through. He's learning from one of the best. One of you is enough, Akara says definitively. We can't have two on the team. Let me talk to Quinn. No, Akara says. Start filling out your logs. I don't care if you write one or two sentences, just show Quinn that it's a requirement. And hey, if you're still relenting, look down. Read your ankle. I roll my eyes. I got a small script tattoo when I was 21. Akara was with me. The ink on my ankle says, live by your actions. Aye, aye, Captain. He He hangs up first. Maximoff switches lanes and checks over his shoulder. Now what's the plan? Fake a log entry? Flee the coast? Fly to outer space? He barely looks my way. The two paparazzi SUVs have multiplied into four. Maybe we can build a colony on Mars, he says, sarcastic. Eat nothing but potatoes for the rest of our lives. You're referencing a movie I've never seen, aren't you? The corner of his mouth rises, but not for long. Real concerns lie beneath his dry wit, and I'm not letting them fester. I'll be vague in my log, I explain, chatter growing louder in my right ear. I pull the earpiece out and increase the radio's volume. It's very far from a grim, dark reality, so stop packing your survival kits and just trust me. He's used to tapping into damage control mode, but he needs to breathe and not jump the gun here. We're just at the start of a marathon of secrecy. Maximoff tries to turn his head to me, but he has to fixate on the paparazzi's vehicles that swarm him. You know that I trust you more than I'd trust anyone else. We've been on the same page about all of this. The no texting, no emails, even being careful with street cameras. And that's meant... it's meant a lot to me. My chest inflates as my mouth pulls in a wide smile. I'm glad you feel safe with me. He makes a face. Is that what I said? In so many words, yeah. He can't restrain his own smile, but then his lips downturn fast. His hands tighten on the steering wheel, and we go quiet as a blue sedan whips into the nearby lane. I spot the camera before the window even rolls down. Maximoff accelerates. I rotate and observe the SUV on our ass. From their front windshield, they point cameras at the Audi's rear window. I silently count 4, 5, 6, and now 7 vehicles on the road, for the sole purpose of obtaining money shots of Maximoff Hale. Get off 95. Not yet. Maximoff cuts off the blue sedan and weaves skillfully in and out of the scattered freeway traffic. Frenzied excitement blares through my earpiece's speaker, filling our concentrated silence. Cobalt Empire all together, Oscar says. Dream team, Donnelly sings songs.
The band is about to start.
Heidi, Elliot Cobalt's bodyguard, whispers into the mic. She's on Epsilon, but Heidi is the only female bodyguard in the whole team. In her early 50s, she's been with the Cobalt since Jane was born. Maximoff switches lanes again, and he must feel somewhat comfortable because he asks, "Wish you were there?" My brows spike. Do you mean with the Cobalt Empire or watching Tom Cobalt and his band perform live publicly for the first time? Either. I keep surveillance of the speeding paparazzi SUVs, and I remember when Maximoff's 17-year-old cousin put together a 3-person punk band when he was 14. Tom is the lead singer. I wasn't one of the bodyguards who saw Tom learn to play guitar. I didn't see him choose a band name or give my input. I roll my eyes because Oscar, of all security members, suggested the name The Caraways, a play off his middle name, Tom Caraway Cobalt. Tom chose The Caraways. And I didn't watch his rehearsals or listen to him rework songs. I crane my neck over my shoulder. I hate that SUV on our ass. Seeing him live at a small venue doesn't mean that much to me. 3, 2, Donnelly whispers. 1. Tom's deep, passionate voice and the fury of guitar, drums, and bass seep through the mic line. I bet all 9 Cobalt bodyguards are pressing their mic buttons so the rest of the security team can listen. Maximoff smiles through the emo punk song. Tom. He shakes his head and then finds a moment to glance at me. He was only 10 when I finally told everyone that I like girls and guys, and I didn't think it mattered to him. But I stood in front of my family at Christmas, presents half unwrapped with goddamn Jack Frost playing in the background, and when everyone started hugging me and smiling, I looked over and Tom was crying. His eyes reddened, Adam's apple bobbing. My chest is taut with emotion. He was happy? So goddamn happy. Maximoff blinks back water that wells. Tom knew he was gay. For as long as I can remember, and I'm 5 years older than him. And when I knelt in front of him and hugged him, I felt guilty, he cringes, for not telling him sooner. I pretty much knew I was attracted to guys by 13. That's 2 years where I could have told him. I extend my arm over the back of his seat, acting like I'm using the seat to check behind us. I just want to be closer to Maximoff. It's admirable how much you care, I say, but he's lucky. He has you at all. Warmly, I add, your compassion is showing. He tries to hold my gaze, but he can't, not with the paparazzi threatening to run him off the road. Do you like compassionate guys? I like you, I say without a beat. He licks his lips, neck reddening. He liked that. I lean back, keeping my arm on the seat. Maximoff glances at me. When did you come out to your dad? I was 11, I tell him easily. And my father asked me if there were any girls I liked at school. I said, there were boys. I almost laugh at the memory. I could still see the shock on his face, especially as I confidently said I'm gay. But after the initial surprise died down, he just started asking me about my crush. I came out at school around the same time. He listens carefully. I remember you said something about how you weren't that confused about it. That was a brief conversation we had years ago when he was 16. Both of us had a 4th of July party his family hosted. I'm surprised he remembered. Yeah, I say. I could tell for sure when I was 9. I was at a mall, and I was attracted to the male underwear models in the poster ads. 18 years later, and I still have great taste. I raise my brows at him. Maximoff smiles. Did you just call me hot? I was definitely complimenting myself there. He's about to flip me off, but the traffic steals his attention. And then the Caraways' first song ends and chatter returns. I've been reborn, Donnelly says. Hold me, another bodyguard chimes in. Pass the tissues. He fucking did it. Damn, look how good he was, Quinn adds. Our kid is all grown up, Oscar says, choked up. Shit. Maximoff has widened his eyes, a bit stunned at all of their reactions. You didn't realize, I say. Your achievements are basically ours. Our lives are dedicated to these families, and when they succeed, there will always be a part of us that feels like we succeeded too. He accelerates again. Since you're not on a Cobalt's detail, what's your equivalent of this moment? I think for a short second. The time when Luna learned to drive a car. Maximoff nods in realization. My mom taught my sister, so that means I was in the car too. I notice the blue sedan the same time as Maximoff. He tenses and we're silent. I turn off the radio so he can concentrate. The sedan flanks our left side and two white SUVs are on our right, one on the bumper. Maximoff is a rigid board, constantly eyeing his rearview mirror. Did you know, he says, that my dad banned me from teaching Luna how to drive? Yeah, and I agreed, case in point. I stretch towards him and read the speedometer. 110. I hang on to his seat and lay on his horn. The sedan eases back, but the SUVs only squeeze closer. You should get off 95 now. He tries to veer towards an exit, but paparazzi purposefully trap him. Sit back, Farrell. Not even a second later, all of the SUVs and sedans and every paparazzi vehicle disperses in a mad dash, abruptly freeing us. Fuck, he growls, knowing the cause. Blue and red lights flicker in our rear. We're being pulled over by the police.
21. Maximoff Hale. When I finish a hearing at the local courthouse, I slip on a pair of Ray-Bans out of necessity. Pharaoh is already wearing dark aviators, and in unison, side by side, we push through the double doors. Camera flashes blast in quick succession. Reporters from primetime news stations bounce near me, microphones at the ready, their questions ringing shrilly in my ears. Pharaoh extends his arm and bars the reporters from getting in my face. I move forward. No hesitating, no lingering, no wallowing or complaining. What's done is fucking done, and it's not the first time I pled my case to the court. Not the first time I said, I take responsibility for speeding, but what's being done about the paparazzi? They're rarely fined. The court always replies, regardless of the paparazzi, you have the means to pay for a personal driver. There's no excuse for endangering the lives of other people. I get that. It's why I hardly argue. Before I climb into the passenger seat of my Audi, I catch the tail end of a reporter speaking to a camera. This will be the fourth time the court has suspended Maximoff Hale's license for excessive speeding, and his license will remain suspended for 12 months. I can't drive for a year. Pharaoh slides into the driver's seat, shuts the door, and puts the key in the ignition. For the first time with Pharaoh as my bodyguard, I'm not behind the steering wheel. I crack my knuckles and watch him adjust the side mirrors. You're loving this. His smile widens into James Franco territory, and he revs the car, peeling out of the courthouse. Driving with one hand only, but he ditches the paparazzi after a sharp turn down a narrow street. navigating his way around Philly with ease and precision. My cock throbs. No. If I could speak to my dick, I'd say, "You're not allowed to be attracted to Pharaoh driving my car. That's my car. Mine. He's only allowed behind it for," I wince, "a whole agonizing year." Pharaoh studies my expression in a quick glance.
"Realizing I'm a better driver than you?"
"Realizing doomsday just happened." I crack my knuckles again and shift in the seat, sitting straighter, partly to avoid a hard-on, mostly to stop stressing about not having my feet on the gas pedal or brake. No longer the captain of my ship.
"You call everything doomsday," Pharaoh says, his gaze flitting to me more often.
"No, I don't."
"Toaster broke last week, you said doomsday. You ran out of hangers, you said doomsday. It was raining, you said—"
"Thank you for that short summary." I have no idea what to do with myself in the passenger seat. I lean forward, I lean back, rake my hands through my thick hair, stretch my arms over my chest.
"Just take a breath, Maximoff. I'm not going to run you off the road. I enjoy your blowjobs too much."
I break into a smile. How is he making me smile right now? I inhale and lean further back, ignoring the incessant vibrating messages on my phone. I turn my head to him. Our eyes caress. Pharaoh reaches out with his right hand, but he can't physically touch me, just on the slim chance that anyone in a passing car sees and snaps a picture. Sometimes I wonder if he's silently disappointed by the lack of PDA. For me, it's all the same. I'm not missing what I never had. But being overly cautious is what'll make this last. Pharaoh commits to a safe action. He grips the back of my seat.
"I bet I can distract you all the way home."
His voice falls to an even huskier octave.
"Without touching you. Hell, I bet I can make you hard without talking dirty."
"You must like to lose bets often." Grinning, Pharaoh rotates the wheel with one hand, turning onto another street.
"Who and what did you fantasize about when you were a teenager?"
"Fuck." I adjust in my seat, my cock constricted against my jeans.
"Fuck me. Hard already?"
He lifts his aviators to his head, pushing back his white hair. His mannerisms, the way the corner of his mouth quirks, fucking grips my dick. Agitated, mostly.
"I can tell. It's that little grimace smile thing."
Pharaoh laughs as I flip him off and he adds,
"Come on, Maximoff. What did you jerk off to?
Tell me your favorite gay porn categories and maybe I'll answer."
"Maybe you'll answer,"
he says, brows raised.
"Okay. My favorite gay porn?"
He trails off in thought.
"I like big dick and rough sex."
He flicks on his blinker to take a left turn.
"Have you watched any porn before?"
"Only a few times." I can see how my mom was addicted to porn, and that's partly why I think I stopped logging onto porn sites after the third session. "What did you rub one out to as a teenager?"
"The Olympic male swim team," he says, and off my knotted brows he laughs. "I'm fucking with you. I didn't have anyone in mind specifically."
Pharaoh evades paparazzi in the distance by driving onto a side street. His next glance is knowing.
"Not like you."
He knows my fantasy is him. Bluntly, Pharaoh emphasizes,
"You can say me."
I give him a look. "How are you not freaked out?"
"Because I wasn't the one with the crush."
My face contorts in a series of emotions, landing on a cringe. I could have sworn the bet was to make me hard, not want to push you out of the car. Pharaoh laughs.
"Tell me your fantasy. In detail."
His gaze drips down me in a searing wave before fixing on the street.
"I want to hear it."
Now his bet makes sense. He said he wouldn't have to talk dirty, because he planned for me to. This shouldn't be that difficult. Every single night we fuck in my bedroom and then we fall asleep together. He sets his alarm for 5:40 a.m. on the dot and leaves my townhouse before Quinn wakes. My one-night stand routine has been replaced with a Pharaoh Redford Keene routine. And it's better. Hotter. But it's inherently different. Like right now I can verbally describe a fantasy at noon,
I'm around someone I can fuck the brains out of 24 hours a day, uninhibited, unrestricted access to the most intoxicating, euphoric experience alive, with someone I care about. I lick my lips slowly. If I'm unleashing my fantasy to Pharaoh, I'm going all in. No restraint. I have a fantasy that plays on loop. Pharaoh listens, his eyes on me every other second. I'm in the shower, I continue, and I've thought a ton about what that location means, so I'll save you the trouble of psychoanalyzing me and just tell you. I sit up straighter. I never let anyone stay the morning and shower with me. I never trusted someone to linger like that, but my brain, for whatever damn reason, always, always lets you stay. Pharaoh has this look in his eye, like he wants to kiss me, but knows he can't. He grips my seat tighter, lower. I crave for that hand to drop lower, on me, unzipping me, stroking me. I shake my head once, and then just continue on. So I'm in the shower alone, and then the door opens, and there stands, I feign surprise, my mortal enemy. He rolls his eyes. For fuck's sake, I may lose this shit bet if you keep cutting yourself off. Neither of us brings up how the bet has no stakes, no odds, or payouts, except for bragging rights. I try to be more serious. You're buck-ass naked. Getting better. I shift somewhat in my seat, just visualizing the next part. You enter the shower, shut the door, and you come up behind me. Pharaoh grows still. Behind you. Maybe he expected me to bend him over and pound the fuck out of him, and while that's a good one, it's not the one. Yeah. Our breaths are heavier. My skin flush. Veins pulse in my semi-hard cock. I'm rubbing myself, and your palm usually encases my fist on the wall, your chest up against my back. Pharaoh has to drop his hand off my seat. He rests it on his thigh by the bulge in his black pants. I stretch my head back, my muscles flexed and burning. I keep hardening. After that, you do different things every time. Jerking me off, kneeling down, and sometimes I have you against the wall and I take you from behind, but occasionally I shift again. You're inside of me. Wow, Pharaoh breathes. I rocked your teenage world, didn't I? I flash him an annoyed smile. I'm limp now. Thank you for that. Pharaoh glances at the hard outline in my jeans. Your erection says you're a fucking liar. Don't speak for my cock, I retort, trying not to smile. He's near laughter, and then he drives onto our street. We're in the garage in a matter of seconds, closed and secure, hidden from the public. The only threat is Quinn in the security's townhouse. Pharaoh shuts off the ignition. We unbuckle our seatbelts. As we turn, our eyes collide first, unrestrained and pulsing with want and need. Our lips meet, my tongue parting his, and I edge deeper, our hands wrestling with each other's buttons and zippers. He seizes my shaft in the best grip known to man. Pharaoh has a way with his hands that completely, utterly, massively annihilates me. I break the kiss just to mutter, fuck. He sucks the base of my neck and nips my flesh. Yes. Fuck. Yes. I stroke his impressive literal mouth-watering length, pre-cum slick against my palm. I catch a glimpse of his tattooed fingers wrapped around me. My mouth opens, a guttural groan plastered in my lungs. Fuck me. Pharaoh clutches my jaw with his other hand, and he eats up my expression, consuming my narrowed forest greens that growl, fuck me. He grits down, nose flaring, his chest rising and falling heavily. Our pace increases, the friction like a blissful scorching hell. My head tries to lull back. Fuck, fuck, fuck. I come, and as a deep groan rumbles through Pharaoh, I realized that he comes by watching me hit a peak. Both of us shirtless, pants zipped and cleaned up, I tell Pharaoh to wait before he climbs out of my Audi. He eases his door closed and plants his ass back on the seat. What I'm about to do, I've never done before. It seems so small and infinitesimal compared to sex, but it's not to me. Pharaoh's brows furrow. What is it? I gather all the confidence I own, which is a hell of a lot. I got you something. You got me something, he repeats. Based on every romantic movie ever, it seemed like the right thing to do. I pop open my glove compartment, and I collect a black box about the size of a necklace case. It's not expensive, so lower your expectations. Hey, I have no expectations. Pharaoh rubs the back of his neck and then takes the box from me. I'm genuinely shocked right now. His mouth starts curving. How did you even get this without me noticing? There's this thing called online shopping, I say, and they deliver the goods to your house, and then when security rifles through my mail, namely you, they don't touch anything postmarked Maximoff Hale X. Creepy bastards send me mail under my name, so I always add the X to my personal purchases. His smile expands. Such a precious smartass. He pops the lid off the box, and he laughs. As I was saying, he lifts up a gray and black triangular patch. The stitched words read, Asshole Merit Badge. I motion to the patch. For the amount of awards you've given me, valor, honesty, integrity, resourcefulness, humility, I thought you must have been feeling lonely with zero of your own. He can't stop smiling. He rubs his mouth a few times, but that smile is not vanishing any fucking time soon. He laughs and nods repeatedly. You want me to join your little Wolf Scout club? Maybe. I breathe fully, happiness spreading across my face, clear and free. Something light lives inside of me. Pharaoh edges closer, his thank you written all over his gaze. Even before we kiss. I skateboard into my kitchen while dialing a number on my phone. Pharaoh and I split apart for lunch. He's back in his townhouse, keeping up appearances with Quinn, accomplishing a few other security tasks, like filling out his logs. I open my cabinet and grab a bag of flaxseed chips. FaceTime rings and rings. I have no problem calling my 14-year-old brother 20 or 50 more times until he fucking answers. Right when I think the call drops, the screen switches to an image of a packed freezer. My brows bunch. What am I looking at? I ask, not needing to say a greeting to Xander. If my siblings don't call me, I call them every day, even if it's just for 2 or 3 minutes.
I'm trying to find my breakfast. I just woke up.
I dump chips in a bowl. It's 2 p.m.
It's Saturday. I would have slept till 4 if Kenny didn't blast her screamo music in my bedroom.
In the video chat, his hand shifts the frozen chicken. I can't lie. I miss being at home whenever I hear these small stories. Miss seeing them firsthand. But that's the thing about growing up, getting older. For whatever and however much I lose, I gain something new with someone new. What are you looking for? I ask while skateboarding to my refrigerator.
Mom just bought more toaster strudels and Luna keeps hiding them.
Toaster strudel war is a real Hale thing. Luna thinks that Xander purposefully chomps down all of them, but he usually saves her two that just get eaten by Kinney. Xander asks,
What are you eating?
I flip my camera as I grab a bag of shredded cheese and skateboard to my bowl of chips. Nachos. All of a sudden, 20 frozen items cascade out of his freezer and thud to the floorboards. I hear our family dog scamper off in the background.
Fuck!
Xander curses. The camera is pointed at the mess for literally a full minute while he contemplates putting it all back.
Oh!
I'd clean it for him if I were there.
Just make your breakfast. Pick it up after, Summers.
My nickname for my brother is a play on his X-Men namesake, Alexander Summers. Likewise, my namesake is also X-Men related. Pietro Maximoff, as in Quicksilver. Xander has the strudel box in hand and heads to the toaster. I rotate my camera back to my face and sprinkle cheese on my chips. So, I heard you haven't been outside in weeks.
Do you blame me? No one will tell me how Mom and Dad ended up being photographed from the backyard, Moffy. The backyard in a gated neighborhood. I'm not going out there.
I know how they were photographed. Pharaoh shared the security info with me. I get why my parents would want to keep this secret from Xander. They're worried the truth will ramp up his anxiety. I have the fucking power to unveil the curtains. And I have the power to hurt my brother. One choice. I could say, hey, Summers, paparazzi's remote-controlled drones flew over the house. There may be more flying overhead if security doesn't catch them in enough time. There's no guarantee. So I set the whole truth aside and say, I don't blame you. But you have to face the fucking world. Even if it sucks sometimes.
All the time, he corrects and rips the plastic off his frozen pastry and puts it in a toaster.
I slide my bowl of chips in my microwave. Flip your camera, I say. With a sigh, Xander rotates his camera, the screen showing his face for the first time. Sharp jaw structure, messy brown hair, expressive amber eyes, and a hobbit t-shirt over checkered boxers. As a child, he was lauded as a classic beauty. And that hasn't changed. You know Xander Hale as the most beautiful 14-year-old boy in the entire world, as said by you. You swoon over him like he's the lead singer in a boy band or a famous social media star. You covet any photos you find online and cause his name to trend weekly. You've made his money shots worth quadruple what mine sell for, and in effect, paparazzi stalk him like he's the rarest, most hidden antelope of the pack, when in reality, he's an endangered, timid bird. I know him as my little brother, an amazing human being who speaks elfish if you hang around with him long enough, who's just trying to live in a world that's a little too big for him, who I'll never give up on. I just want him to be able to feel the light now and then. If I have to wrangle the sun out of the fucking sky with my bare hands, then I'll withstand the burn. I'd give it all to him if I could. Fair warning. Imagine your toes being sawed off. And that's what'll happen if you fuck with my brother. You look like shit, I say honestly. You know what would help that? 2 more hours of sleep? Swimming in the backyard pool with your big brother. Xander sighs into a glare.
Just come here and play video games with me. Stop trying to make me so
healthy, thriving, a human who goes outside.
All right, he says. Jesus, you're relentless.
My microwave beeps. I pull out the bowl of chips, and when I return to my phone, I notice Xander squinting at the screen. I give him a look. You picking your nose? I eat a chip. He scratches his cell phone like he's trying to wipe a smudge off the screen.
What is that on your neck? Is that a hickey?
I cough on my chip. Fuck. I drop my phone on the counter and fill up a cup of water under the faucet. I down the water while Xander yells,
What? Where'd you go? I need details.
What's the chance that Pharaoh would be that careless and give me a grade school hickey? Slim. Maybe it's not that bad. I return to my phone and examine my neck and the screen. A dime-sized spot is faintly red, probably because it happened recently. I doubt it'll last. What kind of details do you want? I ask my brother. He contemplates my question for a long moment, and he settles on this.
Is the other person alive?
I smile. I love my family. Xander explains,
Luna says that whoever you hook up with instantly disintegrates into astral particles, never to be seen or heard from again.
That's a fucking terrible superpower.
No kidding.
Xander hot potatoes his toasted pastry.
P.S. Dad is throwing a party in honor of your license suspension today. Everyone is pretty happy.
I saw the group text. The party is parents only, which is kind of bullshit since it's about me. I eat another chip. Are you happy about it too? I ask. He shrugs and then looks at his pastry. Xander reaches some pretty low lows, and our parents hawkeye him a lot. They're even more aware of his health than I can be. Xander barely lifts his gaze to the camera.
I overheard Thatcher saying the Campaway's new format is life-threateningly dangerous.
Thatcher Moretti is his 24/7 bodyguard, but young girls bombard Xander so often that Banks Moretti, Thatcher's identical twin, is also on my brother's detail. Thatcher is one of the stricter guys, I remind Xander. He's probably overreacting.
Yeah, but...
A tense beat passes before he tells me.
I need you to live long, Moffy.
He pauses. his eyes glassing a little bit. He scratches his nose and then rotates the camera to face his paper plate. I stare hard at the phone. My whole life, I've seen the media and nameless, faceless human beings shit on the people I love. Over and over. Clawing with no end in sight, trying desperately to tear them apart. Ripping at the jugular. I walked on a sidewalk at 10 years old and heard the word rape thrown at my mom in threat. You wonder why I didn't become bitter at the world. You wonder why I don't resent the world. Because I knew I needed to become something that could withstand the world. For my siblings, for my family, for anyone who'd grown up after me and needs someone to defend them when they can't defend themselves, when they need a shoulder to cry on or a safety net to fall in, I'm here. I've been here. I'm always here. Strongly, I tell my brother, I'm not going anywhere, Summers.
22. Pharaoh Keene. Black and orange Halloween streamers and pumpkin lanterns drape Maximoff's kitchen cupboards. I line up bottles of liquor on the countertop, tequila, vodka, and flavored rum. I also purchase 2 6-packs of beer, a jug of orange juice, and a liter of fizz. Maximoff scowls at the hall. I arch my brows. You told me to buy a variety. I wave to the bottles. This meets your requirements. Unsaid rule number 1. Maximoff Hale cannot, under any circumstances, purchase alcohol himself. Not unless he'd like a front page headline saying he broke his sobriety. To save himself that headache, he had to ask me to make a liquor store run. His grocery list said, lots of different alcohol, different types and chasers. I already annoyed him about his bad punctuation and random capitalization, one of my favorite things to do, and I pointed out that for a guy who's overly precise, this was the vaguest list he's ever given me. Maximoff crosses his arms over his dark red crew neck, a domineering presence in the cramped kitchen. At the side of his shirt, my mind drifts for a second. I've noticed he's been ditching most of his green shirts for red, a deliberate, calculated change. The public associates most of the Hales, Meadows, and Cobalts with their favorite colors, and his dad's is red. Reich's is green. I'd never tell Maximoff not to care about his dad. Hell, it'd be impossible for him to even try not to care. But the more he attempts to prove his dad's worth, he's essentially more and more and more like Reich Meadows. It's a shit catch-22. There is no winning. And he's smart enough to have already figured this out. Maximoff is just too headstrong to let go and do nothing. What about whiskey or scotch or bourbon? Maximoff asks me. You didn't buy a single dark liquor. I lean a hip against the counter, our bodies naturally close due to the small space. Maximoff draws even nearer, our knees knocking. We're alone in his townhouse. For the moment, at least. I hook 2 fingers in the waistband of his dark jeans. Remind me. I say, voice husky. What's the goal tonight? Maximoff stares at my long tattooed fingers, lost in his head all of a sudden. He uncrosses his arms, and he clasps my wrist. He drives my hand down his jeans. My mouth curves, and I gladly pull us closer, chest against chest, and I slip my palm beneath his boxer briefs. His heady forest greens rise to my mouth. His ravenous, forceful expression sears my body and contracts my muscles. I can practically see all the ways he wants to fuck me in the reflection of his eyes. Besides the obvious goal, I whisper, my cum in your mouth. He hardens beneath my firm grip, but his hand is still wrapped around my wrist. You mean my cum, your mouth? So that's how it's gonna be tonight. Playing for the lead, I smile, not giving in to his demands that easily. I said what I said. The goal, he remembers, the real goal tonight? Maximoff pulls my hand out of his jeans. To clear his head for a second, I comply and rest my elbows on the counter. I help him verbalize the real goal. Is to get your cousin drunk. Maximoff scowls at the whole scenario. Or like she said, I want to know what it feels like to be fucking drunk, which could be 1 beer or 3 or 20 vodka shots. 20 shots, I repeat flatly. We're trying to get her feel good wasted, not kill her. We're not talking about Jane Cobalt. His 19-year-old cousin, Sullivan Meadows, asked him for advice about partaking in a quintessential adolescent party night, with booze included, something she's never done since she dedicated her time to competing and swimming as a professional athlete. For 3 hours, this was all security could talk about. Our comms convo went something like this. Donnelly. Does Moffy know anything about booze? Me. He knows vodka's clear. Akara. Don't get me started. Oscar. Someone convince Jane to convince Charlie to go so I can be there. Me. Or we could just have fun without you, Oliveira. The younger Hales, Meadows, and Cobalt all refer to Maximoff for advice, help, anything. And while the guy is great at many things, he's not great at everything, like alcohol. Apparently his cousins and siblings don't care about good advice, just his advice. It speaks volumes about their sheer love for Maximoff and their lack of common sense. Maximoff returns to his first point of contention. Feel-good wasted can include dark liquor. He glares as my amusement brims to the surface. What? Thank God for my drunk adolescent behavior. You see, we want to start her with the basics, not level her up to a graduate degree in drinking. I count off my fingers, staring with my thumb. No whiskey, no bourbon, no scotch, no puke. He blinks slowly into a no-nonsense glower. You're getting off on this. Getting off on what? The fact that you know more than me about something? My brows ratchet up. Wolf Scout, I know more than you about a lot of things. If I got an erection every time this happened, I'd be walking around with a constant hard-on. And I was just about to offer to help you. He gestures to my cock. Seeing as how I would have been the cause, but now... He places a hand on his chest. I'm not feeling so generous. I roll my eyes and lick my lips, smiling. Is that right? I sweep our builds. Still pushed up against one another. My hand on his waist. His hand on my ass. Maximoff makes a show of taking one step back, our hands dropping. All the altruism in my bones has withered and died. That's dramatic and impossible. Who's to say that I'm not already a selfish fucker? I sped on a freeway with you in the car, putting your life at risk. Christ, knowing that Jane refused to ever ride in the same car with me if I was behind the wheel, I did that. And I'd probably still be doing it if I had my license. He's not proud. His jaw ticks. Eyes darkened. I'm used to the deep tangents, from blowjobs to life meaning. It's how Maximoff operates. Everything has greater significance to him. Every action has soul-bearing subtext that he tries to unload. His mind is fucking intriguing as hell, and I more than willingly follow every thread, every line of thought. You have your flaws, I say bluntly, and you need to remind me and the public, the media, that you're human. And you're not perfect because you're so afraid to let us all down. I lean closer and whisper, that makes you less of a selfish fucker. Maximoff steps near, his muscular frame colliding with mine. My hand glides against the sharpness of his jaw. His deep breath mixes with mine before his warm lips nudge my mouth open. Our tongues unite, and his hand clenches my hair. Damn, Maximoff. Heat gathers, a groan in the pit of my throat. He instinctively thrusts forward, pelvis against pelvis. He searches for harder contact on his cock, something I notice he does often, something that turns me into a throbbing rock. I pin his back to the counter, grinding my erection against his, and he breaks our hungered kiss to let out a strangled moan. Fuck! I want him naked, bare, bent over the kitchen table. I bet he wants me the same way. I bear more of my weight on him. Maximoff curses out in a throaty groan, his daggered glare on the ceiling. His heartbeat pounds rapidly against my hard chest. I hold his jaw protectively, my fingers sliding over his mouth, down to his neck. Fuck, he breathes. Every look, every word he utters fists my dick. Maximoff turns the tables. He grabs my ass and uses his strength to straighten up. Not letting our bodies separate, he holds us together and walks me backwards. My spine hits the refrigerator. He unbuckles my belt and then slides his coarse hand down my black pants. Only the thin cotton of my boxer briefs acts as a barrier. As he strokes my length, I grit down in arousal, blood pumping hot. Fuck! I bow forward, my head spinning for a second. Looks like you're back to being charitable, I breathe. Maximoff removes his hand. I almost laugh. And then he leaves to prove a point. I'm checking the time, asshole. He rotates his wrist, his cheap watch face in view. We have 10 minutes before everyone gets here, maybe. Only one of us is getting ahead then. Neither of us forfeits that quickly for most things. Maximoff already has a solution and pulls a coin out of his pocket. Let's flip for it. You carry quarters in your pocket? I raise my brows at him. What else is in there, a floppy disk? Shut up and call it. He tosses the coin. Heads. He slaps the quarter on the top of his hand. Then he lifts his palm to heads. You can't beat me at everything, I tell him. I'm starting to think that's your favorite phrase. He lowers to one knee, already manhandling my body by wrenching me forward. Damn. I lean my shoulders on the fridge, pulse in my throat. It's definitely one of them. In one pull, my pants are at my thighs. My fingers weave through his thick hair. Knelt before me, he still seems godly and statuesque, worthy of adoration. His hands trace the muscular curve of my waist that draw him towards my cock. I think I like you down there, I tease. Most people do. He slowly sinks my boxer briefs down my thighs. My erection springs out, and his chest falls in a desirous breath. He looks at me once to say, I give great head. Great. Maybe an understatement, but I tell him, the amount of people that call you humble, I'm beginning to think are all liars. Oh, I am humble, just not when it comes to sex. That comment really stays with me for a second. And then he grips me and languidly licks my tip. Fuck. A blistering knot builds in my throat. My head hits a fridge magnet as soon as his lips wrap around my shaft. Fuck, fuck. Shoulders on the fridge, my waist bowed forward, I rock into his mouth, pushing deeper. I know he can take all of me. I tighten my hold on the back of his head. Maximov clutches and squeezes my bare ass, and I reach back and place my hand on top of his. He sucks and licks, doing most of the work, but my breath heavies like I'm the one running the marathon. I bite down, a groan stuck inside of me. Fuck! I let out a heavy, strained breath. Maximov! His hair tangles in between my fingers. My muscles are on fire. And then Maximov lifts his eyes, my erection all the way in his mouth. His gaze alone nearly makes me cum. He wears a look I've never seen him give anyone. It's one that firmly, confidently, and effortlessly says, "This is my kingdom." My entire body responds, my world lit to the core. He takes my cum in his mouth, licks the remainder off my cock, and he swallows. When he eases onto his feet, like every action he just made is the most natural thing in the world, I almost harden again. Maximov looks utterly consumed by me, his breath heavy, gaze roaming every limb, every inch of my flesh. I pull my boxer briefs and pants up, and he catches my hand before I zip. One breath, he says, I need inside of you. Need. He's dying to come. I let go and surrender to his desires. Whatever he needs, I'd offer him. With the smallest window of time, we urgently slip into the tiny walk-in pantry. Maximov shuts the door and yanks my pants and boxer briefs back down while I unbutton his jeans, freeing his erection soon after. Our hot and heavy breaths mix together. Condom? I ask him. He pulls one out of his pocket. Of course. We kiss in rough, hurried waves, and I steal his condom and roll it on his shaft, faster than he would be. He spits in his palm for lube, the image sticking in my brain, pulsing blood in my veins. I turn, put my forearms on a shelf next to jars of peanut butter and jam, and bend slightly over. I feel his strong grip on my waist. His deep, edged voice kills my fortitude. I'm going to fuck you fast. I press my forehead to my arm, stifling a gnarled moan. Good, I say, choked. Fuck me fast. Maximov eases into me, the pressure nerve-blistering and fucking fuck. He sinks full in and starts thrusting with a quick, hungered pace. I try to seize the wooden shelf, but my mind ascends to a place with zero common sense and just body-numbing feelings. Good fucking God. The pleasure wells up inside of me. I grip my teeth, breathing hot, ragged breaths through my nose. I glance back, his gaze devouring, the way his dick enters me in deep and fast, repeated succession. His satisfaction grips me in a stronger vice. Sweat coating his biceps, he quickens, holding me closer. My jaw aches, gritting down hard, and I let my lips part. A raspy groan barreling through. Fuck! Maximov groans into a low moan. Pharaoh! The words I'm about to come are all over my name. His hand shifts from my waist to my muscular shoulder. Cords in my neck pull taut, heart rate elevated. And then a feminine voice shouts,
Mafi!
Jane, damn it.
We're home!
She blatantly announces her presence. I assume to give us time to collect ourselves if we're indecent. We are very fucking indecent. Finish your pull out, I tell Maximoff, voice hushed. He's surprisingly the one who toys with the risk, staying inside of me. All for that climax. Fuck. I swallow another moan as he rocks forward. I bear hard on my teeth again, especially now that footsteps sound through the living room and kitchen. Maximoff pulls out and tosses the used condom in a small trash can beneath the shortest shelf. We both catch our breath and dress hurriedly. He's armored like he's ready for gunfire, rarely panicked. When he buttons his jeans, he turns to me, and he fixes the wild strands of my white hair. I stand an inch taller and buckle my belt, then I tuck my V-neck into my pants and fit my earpiece back into my ear. I run my thumb against his reddened lips. Maximoff lowers his voice. The shade is called My Lips Against Your Lips, and it's not coming off. Stop rubbing and let's form a plan. I can give you a plan. I unpeel a piece of gum and pop it in my mouth. We exit and say we were gathering food for the party. I collect a handful of shit off the shelves, peanut butter crackers, a pack of Lightning Bolt energy drinks. Maximoff grabs two rolls of paper towels and we both step forward to be the first out. We glance at one another, and then race for it. I grab the knob first and slip out. I laugh when I catch sight of his scowl, and then my lips pull in a line when I notice Jane rifling through the kitchen drawers.
There you are,
she whispers, her curious blue eyes pinging to the pantry, then to us, mainly Maximoff's hair. I flatten a few of his askew strands and then unload all the food next to the liquor bottles. I take the paper towels from Maximoff. He gives Jane a genuine warm smile.
Bonsoir, ma moitié.
He's about to kiss her cheeks, but he freezes midway, catching himself. He grimaces, because he blew me, very, very recently. Jane cringes, putting the pieces together.
You should go freshen up. I'll sort through this spread before Sully and Akara arrive.
She motions to the entire countertop. Thanks, Maximoff cracks two of his knuckles, and before he leaves upstairs, he asks me, You all right? I frown and chew my gum slower. Why wouldn't I be? I read his gaze. Did I go too fast for you? Did I hurt you? It's cute, but I'm the last person that needs a consoling hand. I would have told you in the moment if I wasn't. His shoulders noticeably unbind, and he disappears through the archway. I hear him greet Quinn, but the exchange is normal. I focus on the girl in the kitchen. What do you need? I ask Jane and swivel the knob on my radio, soft chatter returning. She searches through a drawer. Dressed in what Maximoff lovingly calls granny jammies for the party, flannel cat-printed pants and long-sleeved collared top, Jane checks over her shoulder and then whispers to me,
You two are almost dangerously loud. I had to send Quinn back to my car to find chocolate bonbons that I didn't even buy.
I'm more than appreciative of the cover. Thanks. I owe you.
Don't break Moffy's heart. That's payment enough.
She shuts the drawer and opens another.
Or as my mom would say, You break his heart, I'll break your dick.
I whistle and remove liquor bottles from paper bags. That was a mild Rose Calloway hyperbolic threat. No chopping off my dick and flinging it at the sun? Jane crouches to a low cupboard.
Moffy is the one who likes grandiose, embellished warnings.
She shuts the cupboard, empty-handed, and stands.
You can go. I know you're only lingering out of obligation to Moffy.
I'm not about to lie and say, Oh no, Jane, I'm really here for you. I'm not. I stay in the kitchen because Maximoff would want me to. The only thing Jane Cobalt and I have in common is Maximoff Hale. Take him out of the equation and we're a number and a letter that can't be added together. He wants us to get along. I tell her the truth. She opens a nearby drawer and narrows her eyes.
Did he tell you that?
Not in words, I say. But you know, Maximoff, he's so overprepared. I'm waiting for a contract. Sign on the dotted line, I'll be friends with Jane Cobalt type of thing. She removes a cheese grater from the drawer, and her lips draw into a thin line as she looks at me. I said something wrong. I feel it before she even opens her mouth.
So the only way you'd be friends with me is if Moffy made you sign a contract?
No, I say quickly. Fuck. I'm just saying Maximoff is so practical and meticulous with everything. It was a joke. I run a hand through my hair. Did he mention anything to you about us? I motion from her to me.
No, but I've noticed the same thing as you.
She sidesteps to the fridge.
He's nervous we're not going to get along.
And we both agree that we want to make him less nervous? I ask.
Of course,
she says, and snatches a hunk of cheddar cheese from the shelf. She kicks the fridge closed with her slipper.
There's nothing I want more than for him to be happy.
Me too, I say, holding up a hand. See, we're already making progress here. Okay, what else do we have in common? Silence suddenly thickens in the room. She slices a piece of cheese.